Welcome to The Firm Report, the show where we pull back the curtain on what it really takes to build and grow a successful law practice. Each week, we'll be talking with attorneys, marketing pros, and operational specialists from law firms around the country. We'll dig into real stories, smart strategies, and the practical tips that can help you grow your firm and serve your clients better. Let's get into it.
I was always very uncomfortable with the leverage that the insurance industry had on my clients and had on attorneys. And every client I ever represented for the first 30 years, they want the real value of their claim and they want it as fast as possible. And nobody wants to sue anybody and nobody wants to be sued. But the only way to get to that end of the road to get real value is to go this long litigation process. Mm-hmm. And so before we started putting courtrooms in and doing some jury research focus groups, the thing is, it was the same thing. You know, you make an offer, they pay half of you a dollar amount, say this is a fair amount. Your clients say, hey, is that fair? And so, well, I don't know. You never know what a jury's going to do. You know, it could be more, it could be less. And if you put yourself in the position of a client, and that's the advice you're getting, I mean, what are you going to do?
You've been on that marketing journey. You've seen the evolution of marketing of a consumer that probably originated, you know, and I would assume back in the day, print, yellow pages, newspaper, yep, television with a few channels, to now we're in a hyper era where I believe that the preceding election, how that person won the presidential office, that those are essentially the blueprint of what is really truly working in marketing versus what every sales rep organization tells you, which we all know that last election, when it came down to it, was won through a viral moment at a drive-thru McDonald's, a podcast with Joe Rogan, and what everybody talked about on social media. Google wasn't in the conversation, though I know Google does drive the end of the funnel for a lot of law firms we work with and is definitely dominant in the conversation. Hi, thank you for joining us today for another episode of The Firm Report. And today we have a wonderful guest, Dirk Derrick, who's a South Carolina PI firm, PI lawyer. And I'll let you introduce yourself as well, Derrick.
Yep. Here in South Carolina, we statewide practice. I've practiced for 37 years and things have changed a lot, especially since AI started poking its head up. But we have 10 offices around South Carolina. We also have 6 courtrooms. We do a lot of jury research focus groups for our cases for other attorneys in South Carolina. And this past year, we started doing it nationwide for lawyers.
That's awesome. So you have 10 offices, 6 courtrooms, I assume, are within the offices.
That's correct.
And we'll get into that, but to do some of the studies that you're doing with juries and.
That's correct. We have gone, I think we built the first courtroom in 2018 when we built this Conway office. And at the time we had 5 lawyers. And since then we have, and 1 office, and we now are up to 35 lawyers and 10 offices.
That's so awesome.
Yep.
Awesome. Definitely, you know, to, I guess, go back in time a little bit, back to the future here, but I want to talk about, when did you go from 1 office to, I would assume, 2 offices, or how did that look?
I was always very uncomfortable with the leverage that the insurance industry had on my clients and had on attorneys. Mm-hmm. And every client I ever represented for the first 30 years, they want the real value of their claim and they want it as fast as possible. And nobody wants to sue anybody and nobody wants to be sued. But the only way to get to that end of the road to get real value is to go this long litigation process. Mm-hmm. And so before we started putting courtrooms in and doing some jury research focus groups, you know, the thing is, it was the same thing. You know, you make an offer, they pay half of you a dollar amount, say this is a fair amount. Your clients say, hey, is that fair? And say, well, I don't know. You never know what a jury's going to do. You know, it could be more, it could be less. And if you put yourself in the position of a client, and that's the advice you're getting, I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to go litigate for a year and a half or 2 years? Or are you going to take the settlement? And always felt like the insurance industry had the leverages of time, money, stigma, and uncertainty on our clients and on the lawyers. I mean, we're trying to build businesses. We're trying to run businesses. And, you know, you can't go try every case. It's what, you know, we can't try every case and find out what the real value is. So kind of got tired of it. Focus group, a big case that we had rented out some rooms at a convention center, brought in a videographer, spent $40,000 and got good results by not only learning about the case, but sharing it, the outcomes and the interviews and the deliberations, the videos with the other side, got the real value of that claim for my client without going to litigation. I thought that's interesting. So we built a courtroom and started doing it. And it has helped us prevent unnecessary litigation, speed up litigation, get our clients, first of all, show our clients what the real value of their case is, and dump in their lap their option, what they want us to do. But we can show them what 12 people think. We can show them what 112 people think. And on big cases, we can show you what 250 people think. And it's just, it has allowed us to escape this insurance matrix that we were living in, and where lawyers are evaluating cases based on what insurance companies will voluntarily pay you versus what the real value of the case is. Mm-hmm. And in those 6 years, our average case value has gone up 150%. So we were actually selling for about 40 cents on the dollar before we found the truth about the value. And then as we started doing that over and over and over, clients get happy, you make fans, and you can turn cases faster, and we just grew. I mean, we just took off and been blessed and have grown a lot.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Definitely, you know, by, I guess, DNA and just like in me, I love marketing. I'm obsessed with marketing in a lot of ways. And I assume to have built your practice to the levels of where you're at today, you've been on that marketing journey. You've seen the evolution of marketing of a consumer that probably originated, you know, and I would assume back in the day, print, yellow pages, newspaper, you know, television with a few channels, to now we're in a hyper era where I believe that social media, I believe that the preceding election, how that person won the presidential office, that those are essentially the blueprint of what is really truly working in marketing versus what every sales rep organization tells you, which we all know that last election, when it came down to it, was won through a viral moment at a drive-thru McDonald's, a podcast with Joe Rogan, and what everybody talked about on social media. Google wasn't in the conversation, though I know Google does drive the end of the funnel for a lot of law firms we work with and is definitely dominant in the conversation. But with that open-ended conversation statement of the evolution of marketing, where did you start and where have you evolved to, and what do you do for marketing the firm?
Well, for the first 25 years, I did nothing. I was a firm believer in the professionalism of law and that we shouldn't market. Mm-hmm. And I think I had a Yellow Page ad, and I may have had a static web page at one time that some vendor sold me. And but what happened was people started marketing, and a decision had to be made. Am I going to market and compete and do the law I want to do? Or am I going to sit here on Main Street in Conway and do five different areas of law because the PI work's getting sucked up by marketers? So it was 2009. I wanted to market differently. I wanted to do something with taste and something that I could still feel like it's a dignified marketing plan. So I stumbled into online marketing in 2009. I found a vendor who was saying out that you could have a web page that you put content in and Google was going to send people to you. And people were not doing it. In 2009, I had a paralegal, and my wife was working part-time in the office. And I decided, okay, we're going to try to grow a firm. I'd raised both of my sons. They were both, the youngest one was going into high school. I'd coached them all through rec ball. And I said, if I'm going to build a firm, I need to do it now. I'm getting ready to turn 50. So I latched onto that, and I says, I can do that because I can give people good representation and get reviews from people and let them talk about us where we're not talking about ourselves, and try to build a practice. And that's what we did. We got in on Google very early. We dominated Google for the cost of one employee putting content on the page for the first 5 years, I think. That's all it cost to dominate Google at the time.
Yeah.
And we got ahead on the reviews. I was already getting questionnaires from my clients asking them how we did things from excellence to poor so that we could keep improving. I just changed that from 5-star to 1-star and started getting Google reviews as soon as they came out. And that's where we marketed. My whole idea of marketing was let's be a customer service law firm, give them the best representation possible, and then let them talk about us. And basically that's what we've done. I mean, that's how we built it. I think we got more 5-stars than anybody in South Carolina.
That's awesome.
We were doing it just online. And then had somebody try to attack my online presence, which I didn't know you could do, and was messing us, was dropping us on the online. So I said, I got to have a little bit of diversity. So I started with some billboards, and all it had on it was Derek Law Firm and how many 5-star reviews with 5 big stars at the top of the board. And that was the second way we marketed, just to, again, drive home that the public have given us these 5-stars.
Yeah.
Here goes the name of my firm. Go look, doesn't have a phone number, didn't have a jingle, didn't have my head on it, and just rode that marketing and have grown. The thing that really took us, I think, over the edge when we started doing these focus groups, the ability to make fans out of not only our clients, But the focus group participants who are coming in and seeing that we're doing things that no other lawyers are doing, they see that we're working at night and the steps we're going to get to the truth of what a jury would do. And that impresses people, and that has helped our growth.
That's awesome. It's definitely, it allows you to expand your reach, right? And engage the mock juries or the people that you're recruiting in. What type of characteristics do you look for when you're recruiting people to participate?
We want everybody. Mm-hmm. We pay them $25 an hour. Mm-hmm. We're looking for people across the board, every kind of person in a community, because that's who's going to be called on the jury. So we're going to do a demographically correct jury for that area. We use social media to go out, but it's across the board as far as who we want. We want from every walk of life. And we will study, we did a focus group for Austin, Texas, on Tuesday of this week. Mm-hmm. It was an Alabama lawyer presenting an Austin, Texas case. They presented from Alabama to 12 live jurors in Myrtle Beach. But we also shot it out to, I think, 50 people in Austin, Texas sitting at home. So mm-hmm. we could get the data from a local. I like the higher number of jurors to determine value, but I like the 12 jurors that we divide into two jury rooms to get the deliberations and to get, I think the main thing we get from deliberation is the ability to grade jurors on leadership, but also we find out all the rabbit holes that a anti-plaintiff juror will try to suck other jurors down to their opinion. We call them rabbit holes. They throw things against the wall and see how many jurors they can convince to come with them. So I always want to have the live jurors in our focus groups.
Interesting. That's awesome that you fight the cases and you take them to court, where they... That's interesting because you hear a lot of different areas on the practice of law these days, and sometimes it seems like it's almost like an art to settle at some point before you actually hold another party accountable. But the art of a jury trial, I believe, is a true art. I've heard some awesome trial attorneys, and I know that they're heavily sought after. Just like the logic games, I think, that go into that, that the final conversations with the jury, that boxer, it's got to be incredible.
Yeah, it's very interesting, and it's a lot of cases are tried because of the disagreement between everyone as far as what those 12 jurors or 8 jurors or whatever jurisdiction you're in, what they're going to do with this case. Every case is different. Mm-hmm. The reason there's lawsuits, people disagree with what a jury's going to do with this case. Mm-hmm. And we are able to show our attorneys and outside attorneys, here goes what's important in this case. Here goes what the values are on this case. Here goes what they want to see on this case. So you can take the results of these focus groups and the videos of them deliberating and all the data. We do a 20-25 page AI report on every focus group we do that has everything in it. It's got, everything's charted, but also per juror, what they said, what talked to them, what presentation models. And you can take that and you can build your case better and go to court. Mm-hmm. Or if, they're higher than the policy limits in your case, you can take it and package it up and send it to the other side and say, hey, here goes the value, pay me. And we started doing that early on, and it got cases resolved faster. By the time we come up on a roster, we don't try a whole lot of cases. We've shown the other side the value way before we get to a courtroom. Mm-hmm. And it's the missing link. It's given them enough information that they are worried about costing their shareholders money if they make us try it.
So, with that all being said, what's like the one, like that case or event or that catalyst or the influence that took this from, I guess, going case by case to being more of like a science and an art and a passion of like research and innovation? Because it takes a lot of funding to do what you're doing. Like, it's not, nobody's just like, I'm going to endeavor, and we'll talk a bit about AI here in a second. But like, I know for a fact from my own trials and tribulations, it's not a non-ventured, idea and concept, self-funded, and a lot of like monetary resources as well as your own mind and everything going into it. But like, what was that like catalyst or event or case that like pivoted this from just like case by case to like a science and an understanding of everything going on?
I had a big case that we did it at when we rented space and did it with outside videographer. It cost us about $40,000 to do. And we had 4 different juries, and it's typical for lawyers to do these on big cases. Where you can go spend $40,000 or $50,000 and find out what the jury said. And we did it, but we also videotape conversations with the jury and their deliberation. And And for the first time, I didn't just take that information to build a stronger case. I showed the other side. And it had a positive outcome for my client. Because remember, every one of my clients want is the real value of the case as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. They do not want to go to court unless you have shown them their case is worth more than they're being offered. And so with these focus groups, we're able to start showing our clients the value of the case that empowered them to allow us to keep driving and going forward and getting more money for them. In the past, say you have a case and lawyers, I'm gonna tell you now, the first thing I learned is lawyers don't know how to evaluate cases because we were misevaluating cases left and right. Last night we focus group a case here and the four lawyers who were involved, we're talking about what the jury's gonna do. We're all wrong. We do not think like jurors. We do not think like common working people in a community. And, but we started using it and seeing the results and sending it to the insurance company, the whole deliberation, the whole presentation, and started getting the information back and getting real value faster and making our clients happy. And I said, this thing's powerful. We also started, we were able to use it as expectation setters for our own clients. I think one of the first cases we did, we focused it, or we had an offer of this amount, our client wanted this amount, we focused it, and both of the focus groups came down here. And we're getting ready to go to court on that thing. And there was a very good chance, based on what the jury said, we don't lose the case. And before we started using focus groups, we had to have a conversation with our clients based on our feelings. We think there's a problem. You got this issue. You got this issue. You could lose it. And it's a bad place to be with your client. Your client wants you to be their fighter, warrior on their side. And then you're having to sit down and say, hey, you may lose this thing. Maybe you should settle. And it's very easy for a client to say, hey, man, I thought you were on my side. I thought you were my fighter. Do you not want to fight? You don't want to litigate a case. You're just trying to make a fast dollar. So we've removed that. Our policy now in-house is if it involves questionable liability, where there's a fight on whose fault it was, if it involves permanent injuries, any kind of permanent injuries or any kind of potential punitive damages, our lawyers know they pay us all the money that's available or we focus group the case. Mm-hmm. And early on, we had that client who thought his case was worth a lot more. We focused it and showed that we already had an offer twice as much as what the jury was going to give him. And so I invited him in and made him sit down and listen to the two juries deliberate his case and told him, you listen to him, you say, Dirk, we want to go try this case. We'll go try the case, but you're going to be fully informed up front of what the jurors are going to say in the jury room. And we settled that case and I believe did a lot better for our client than if had we gone to court.
That's awesome. That's very, very interesting. It's to, you know, pivot forward. Have you ever seen Minority Report? Just out of curiosity, Tom Cruise movie.
I have seen Minority. It's been a number of years.
You should probably rewatch it since you've endeavored in this because they're essentially, they are predicting the outcomes, right? He had to change his eyes so he could, you know, evade like what the futurist said he was going to do, or, you know, what the lottery said, because it seems like, you know, what you're developing, it does, you know, kind of, it even convinces some of your plaintiffs like, hey, like this is the reality of where the balls will, you know, settle or like where it's going to, you know, if we go forward with it, that's really awesome. But I, you know, I have a lot of conversations these days, whether it's, you know, talking to clients or, you know, in the evolution of the pitch or where it just seems like we are in the midst of the industrial evolution, like revolution, but evolution, whatever you want to call it. I went and test drove a Tesla this week. And my wife was like, how was the test drive? I was like, it wasn't really a test drive. She's like, what do you mean? I was like, I got in the car. The guy said, where do you want to go? He points to it on the screen. And he goes, okay, cool. We're going to use the autopilot. It starts. And I was like, I didn't touch the wheel. I was like, my kid's in the backseat watching Netflix. And I'm like, this thing is awesome. And I'm like, I didn't touch it once. And I drove a 911, like a Porsche 911 to the dealership to go take this test drive, right? So I like get out of the test drive. The test drive took like 10 minutes. So I'm like, wow, this guy literally created the iPhone of cars. Like, my wife goes to me. She's like, if you get a self-driving car, what are the kids going to think? I'm like, do you really think our kids are going to be driving in 5 to 10 years? Like, literally, I was on a conversation the other day and this lady's like, we need to like have this vision of what it looks like in 5 to 10 years. I'm like, at the rate evolution's going, I'm like, she'd be more concerned of like what your business looks like, but like really like what technical infrastructures look like in 5 to 10 months these days are like hyperspeed evolution. Which brings me to, you know, the cat's out the bag, right? Like we would all probably, I think it's safe to say that tech tried to basically, I would say, keep the lid on AI for a period of time till Sam Altman basically had his back against the wall because the Tesla guy, you know, kind of like they started to have some infighting. And basically, if they didn't release ChatGPT to the world at the time they did a few years ago, they would have been potentially like beat to the first, you know, getting that first punch out there. But wow, how far we've come in like a matter of maybe 2 years, like where AI and tech has really proven that the things that, you know, some of these tech evangelists talk about, like a universal base income and like the fact that there's going to be droves of people out of work, it's all like kind of like culminating. And I'll let you get to this, but like the one last thing that I have to add to this is like, I had some people over my house that were like working at a big accounting firm and big consulting, big accounting firm in the US. And they did a lot of work, got paid very, very great careers, right? And they used to say, they said that India would send them their like analysis and then they would write the memo and do these things. With AI, now India can write the memo because they can interpret the data, it gets put out. And then the US person is literally just now down to like 10 to 15% of the work, analyzing it, fine tuning it, presenting it to the end client. Which brings us to where we are today, where we're, you know, standing at these like these gates of time where it's like, wow, it's like what AI, robotics, and the layering of studies like what you're doing and building up like, you know, just a potential like a mindset, but for a computer that can think with all this data you're collecting, you know, being the one that's like the evangelist behind what you're creating. You know, the impact that you're creating, it sounds like it's going to be massive to the legal space in general. And yeah, can you talk to it? I mean, we're talking, you know, just I'm just interested to learn more about where you're going with this. And then, sorry, I had to talk a little bit about like my reality checks with the test drive, where I literally was driving this nice car home and I'm sitting in traffic and I'm like, WTF, I'm driving. Like, what is, I like put it back in the garage and I'm like, what do I own a museum? Like a museum of cars?
You went on a test ride. You didn't go on a test drive.
I didn't go on a test drive.
Yeah.
I got my future transport. I was like, the guy who drives me to baseball, like to Marlins games, like I don't need him anymore. Like if I don't want to go on a long drive, the guy that I pay, you know, to take me on, if my car's like.
I was telling, we started doing the focus groups to help one client, you know, let's help this client. Let's learn about this case. And then as we grew and as AI started being whispers in the wind and the importance of having data and how it's going to be able to, and you know, what it does is just the ability to mine everything that's in your data now. I mean, it's just, I know that in the 10,000 jurors I have, if I had time to go pick through them, I could tell you the best jurors for particular types of cases. I could grade jurors for a particular type of case. Or I can tell you the average of the 400 people who decided the value of a cervical disc surgery patient. And, you know, with Domo, we had machine learning where you have to structure all the data and listen, but and then filter it back out. But with AI's ability to give it to you immediately, once we started and got to it, and when they were talking about AI, I started saying, you know, this thing, this data, this is going to be the thing. It's going to be valuable if we continue and we double down on collection of this data. So when we got enough of AI and ChatGPT to summarize all this stuff we get in one night in the focus groups, we started doing it for attorneys all throughout South Carolina. And we started doing these single events, or single focus groups for these attorneys across the country. But when we have the system, the AI system that can talk to structured and unstructured data, and could share that with attorneys across the country so that they can share that with the public across the country, it will be the first time that the public has data better than the insurance industry. It will not only level the playing field like it has for my clients now and for people who hire us, it's not only leveling the playing field with knowledge, but it's not tilted towards our clients and towards the public. And the public, and the ultimate solution that I dream about is having the data that any attorney in South Carolina can get onto, use to focus group individual case, but then you don't have the data that gives you a data-driven jury selection process to identify who you need to strike. It's going to tell you the data points you need to ask in voir dire to get the bad jurors off. It's going to give you an upgraded grade for each potential juror when you plug in the answers to those data questions. It's going to give you who to strike. You don't strike them. You don't have the people sitting in the box. You don't prompt it again. And it's going to tell you your predictive analytics with those 12 people that are left in the box. So you can talk to your jury and says, here goes what the data shows as far as if we go forward with these 12 people, here goes the ranges we can expect and the outcomes we can expect. If the if the client says, let's go forward, prompted again to say, okay, you got these 12 people, you know the data behind them. Tell me the specific pieces of evidence and arguments that each one of them and people like them respond to positively so that we can personalize the presentation to the 12 people in the jury box. When we get that kind of litigation leverage, we will get real value faster, not only in my firm, but anybody who has the ability to use it to have that leverage for the client so they don't have to go through long litigation. And if they do go through litigation, we don't have the best knowledge going into the courtroom and throughout the trial to help our clients. And we can't, I don't ever tell anybody we can predict 100% exactly what a jury's going to do. And it's not a thing of certainty. It is, it's playing the odds, but we can really, it's not me guessing anymore what juror would be good for our client or which argument I hope these 12 people will respond to. It'll be all data driven. And awesome. I started when the whole AI started coming out in the air and we had this database, I started visiting MACON AI conference in Cleveland, I think about 3 years ago. And I went there and maybe taken a couple of staff members there 3 years and then and took some more people 2 years. And then this past year, we went again. This week, I've met with every department in my law firm and explained to them the jobs you have right now. Litigation paralegals. Y'all been doing this litigation paralegal work for 25 years and yeah. You've been doing it a certain way. That way is not going to exist at the Derrick Law Firm in 6 months. And I don't believe it's going to exist in the market in 18 to 24 months. If law firms are still paying paralegals to do 100% of their work instead of doing 50% of the work and managing AI agents and AI solutions to do the other 50% so that they can double their capacity, they're going to get left behind.
I agree.
And, we've bought a product for operations where we can implement AI and create a lot of drafts, answer discovery quick. It's going to speed us up. It's going to make us better. But it's in our world, I think in every kind of profession, it's just going to change. I mean, you either got to be willing to change with it or you're going to get left behind. It's going to be like, you know, using computers. When I got out of law school, I went to a law firm that had typewriters. They also had onion paper. I don't know if you remember that thin onion paper.
The dot matrix or?
Yeah, they print memos on it. It was cheap
paper. Dreams or?
Yeah. So, and I think that we're getting ready to go through transformation in the next 12 to 18 months will be just as big as what I've gone through since I got out of law school. And started practicing in 1988 to present. I think it's going to be that big of a change.
Oh, it's you know, the Moore's law where it's like, oh, the processing speed of a semiconductor is going to double in speed every 18 months or whatever it is these days. It's like, take that same law and apply it to AI and how hyper speed it can evolve and really you know, take it to next level. It's just because it's building itself in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's exciting. I think I told every department I met with 2 days ago, I said, you know, I think it's a very, very exciting time. Some people don't like change. Some people, you know, and it's lawyers down. I mean, I met with the lawyers. I said, the way you're practicing law right now will not exist. It will not exist in 2 years. If somebody's practicing law the way you were before we got AI, they will be left behind because it's going to help do things better and faster and allow you to be more of a lawyer instead of doing things that you don't like to do.
Correct. I mean, you can, it's like playing the game of chess. You can see, you can think moves ahead of what the other side's going to do versus just your own game, you know, focusing so much on, yeah, with that extra time, you can actually ask that, well, what would you do? Or like, if you were in the defense's shoes, how would you fight this case or position yourself?
Or if you have a lawyer hero who's written books and given presentations, put your facts against what he's got out in the public. So how would he argue this case?
Oh yeah. You could rebuild a Johnny Cochran. You could get another, if the glove don't fit, you must acquit. You could get some lines like that. You can get it out of an AI. I've heard George Carlin comedy since he's passed.
Yeah, it opens. I mean, it's just changed everything about the way we build cases. You know, the AI is going to allow us to change our systems and operations and getting all this information out of these focus groups and the combination of those two things, having knowledge we've never had with operation efficiencies we've never had, makes it an exciting time to practice law.
It's an exciting time, I think, to just be in any industry or just, it's an exciting time to be like, I always think it's an exciting time to be working because I love what we do. But definitely, you know, with that being said, at Exults, you know, we focus on driving results. If there is like one key thing that's allowed you to drive results in either your personal or your business life, what is that drives Dirk, that one thing that really drives your results?
Well, I want to leave, I want to, there's a desire to help people, not only my clients, but the clients of other lawyers and the public at large, because I feel like they've always had leverage on them. And so the desire, the why is that. I want to make a difference in as many people's lives as I can. The how is, I think, a willingness to learn and grow and not get stuck in where we, what we did last year, how we're doing it now. I was talking to another lawyer who's a little bit younger than me. I'm getting ready to turn 66, and I think he was in the late 50s. And I was telling him I'm getting ready to go at Macon to learn some more about AI. He said, "How old are you, Dirk? Well, you, why are you worrying about AI?" And I said, "I don't think you can ignore it." And I'd love to continue to learn. And I think that desire to learn and stay on the forefront of things with the addition of trying to help as many people as I can before I retire are the two things.
That's awesome. And I hate to say it, but I don't think you're retiring ever.
So. You sound like my wife. My wife said, "Dirk, you're not retiring.
You're not retiring, Dirk." You're awesome. Definitely. And everything that you're working on is great. So I just, you know, nobody's going to take you out of the lab. And yeah.
You may be right. My father worked, he died at 81, and he was working 2 weeks before he passed away. And I used to ask him, I said, can't you just relax? Can't you just, but he was like, "I've kind of grown into my father. I think retirement would be extremely boring. Yeah. I can only, fishing doesn't excite me. My golf game frustrates me. And I get bored very easily."
Yeah. You can only golf or fish so much. And it's definitely, you know, it's exciting to be part of like the forefront of evolution and where things are going. Yeah. So definitely, Dirk, definitely appreciate you making the time to join us today. If our listeners would like to find you, where's the best place?
They can email me at Dirk.Derrick@DerrickLawFirm.com. Or just go to DerrickLawFirm.com and contact us. We have an appraisers podcast that we do. That appraisers podcast is a closed podcast for plaintiff's attorneys only. And they could contact, if you go to our website, it will show you how to contact somebody and seek permission to get a code so you can listen to it. Those are people that we've done focus groups for, both in-house and outside attorneys, where we talk about, you know, the status of their case when they came in, what truths they learned about their case, what truths they learned about the jury, and how they leverage those truths to get their client real value. So it's a kind of case by case situation. So that's closed just to plaintiff's attorneys. And if you are interested in listening to that, and if you practice law on the plaintiff side, you could come register for that.
Awesome. Well, Dirk, I definitely appreciate your time. And yeah, thank you to all our listeners for tuning in for another episode of The Firm Report. And thank you.
That's it for today's episode of The Firm Report, brought to you by Exults, a full-service digital marketing agency helping law firms reach new heights. If you enjoyed the conversation, make sure to like, subscribe, and share the show with someone who'd find it valuable. You can find us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.